Powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina and broadcasting from down under in Australia, welcome to the inaugural episode of Primetime Jukebox. Tonight, Dave and I launch the next era of Jukebox as we talk about Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. And Primetime Jukebox is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars. Awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binders and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And Drew Estate is the official sponsor of live streaming for the Primetime family of shows. Welcome, everybody. This is the inaugural episode of Primetime Jukebox. This is Will Cooper. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios, and I'm fired up because I'm joined by my co-host, literally halfway around the world, Mr. Dave Burke in Australia. Dave, how are you doing?
Hi, it's good. It is hot here. It is about 95 Fahrenheit. It is 10:40 in the morning. So we're about a day apart. So that's why it might be very light by where I am.
Yep.
But no, it's good. I'm very excited.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited too. It actually is about like 48 degrees in North Carolina here right now.
Right.
It was a little cool in the studio. I turned the heat up and then it got a little hot. So I just cooled it down right beforehand. So it's awesome to have you here. By the way, thank you very much for the trust you've had in terms of doing the great work with Cigar Jukebox to bring this over here, because I'm honored that we were able to kind of make this work out here.
No, I'm very excited. I am honored, Will. Will is the inspiration for my podcasting in general, way back to the Stogie Geeks days.
And yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. And, you know, it's kind of, I was thinking about the beginnings. I do remember when you reached out to us on Stogie Geeks when you got started, you were a listener and you were starting this concept. And Paul and I were pretty intrigued by the whole concept of what you were doing. And one thing led to another, and it led to several guest appearances on each of the shows, and a great friendship on top of that. So I've been pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Will is a seasoned guest DJ and loves talking music. So, no, it's great. I mean, I think this kind of came about because doing the actual Cigar Jukebox show was getting very time intensive, but it had a lot of great followers to the show. So, we sort of wanted to find a way to do it that we could still have fun with it and keep it kind of going, but still make it so that it could come out on time and everything. And this just sort of happened.
Yeah, and it did. I know about a year ago, you were talking about possibly closing down Jukebox. You were getting close to the 200 episodes. I expressed an interest in it, but I had some medical problems late last year, and I just said, hey, man, it would be a big mistake to do it. So we revisited it earlier this year, and I'm glad we were able to kind of finally get it done, which I was real excited about.
Yeah, I guess for those of you that are more fans of Will and are just checking it out, haven't really listened to Jukebox before, what it is, it's everybody likes to pair things with cigars, and Cigar Jukebox is a pairing show, but you pair music with the cigars. So the way it came about was I'd sit out on my front veranda like I am now, have a cigar, and I would listen to the music. And I found certain songs with different cigars, and my wife said, just, you should do a podcast. And I did. And about, I think all up, I did about 350 episodes, some of that.
Yeah, you had a lot out there.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's like, I guess it's pairing, but it's pairing music with cigars, which over time, I found that a lot of listeners loved it, and a lot of people in the industry. I was really surprised at how many people in the industry either had a music background or were big fans of music.
Yeah, you know, and that was kind of, like I said, I had never thought of that concept before. And I heard Dave Garofalo say this, and I agree with him. I kind of wish I thought about it. Like, it was such a great idea, right? So I was like, when you kind of started talking about doing the Coop's Corner segment, I'm like, yeah, I want to be a part of this however possible. So it was just, it was a privilege to be on that. And to watch the show grow the way it did, you certainly built your audience there. And what I liked what you did is you had people who weren't cigar smokers tuning into this show.
Yeah, I had people write in that just came for the music, which is interesting. I had people come for the music, and I had other people come for some of the cigars that wrote in and said, like, oh, you introduced me to so much new music. And it's a great show. It's a show, I guess what's great, too, about doing with Will, which is very exciting, is, you know, you're really well-known in the industry, and a lot of people really have high regard for you. And so it's great to sort of do a show with you just in general. But also, like, with the music set, it allows for a lot of different things. So, like, we do a dedication show and get listeners' input on that. We have a Spotify playlist for people so they can listen to the music as they have the cigars. It's a good way to get, you know, over time, have listeners sort of interact with us. Like, let us know if cigars or music you'd like us to do. It's very open. You do a lot of things with it.
Yeah, I'm total agreement with that. You know, and the Spotify playlist is something new, maybe for your Cigar Jukebox listeners. The little bit of a challenge what we do is, because we are doing video here, was some of the platforms that we stream or broadcast on are very strict about copyright. Audio platforms, I'd say it's a little easier, but it's much more difficult with the video platforms. They can literally shut us down. So we had to come up with a creative way. And I think the playlist idea is great because, you know, I already got some good feedback, you know, on the concept. You know, people could either, you know, they can watch on their phone or their iPad on one device and then on another device play the Spotify playlist, or they can go back later and certainly listen to it as well.
Yes. So there'll be a playlist up that you can – we'll have it out before the show, obviously,
yep.
So you can,
yep,
you can track it down. And I guess for playlist listeners – and today will be an example. It'll have all the music we cover on the show, but there'll be extra music there. So if we mention a song, it'll be on there. Or if, say, we're doing a best new music, we might only talk about 5-6 songs on the show, but I'll have like a bunch of other ones on the playlist. So if you go to the playlist, you'll get a lot of extra music as well.
Yeah, and that's what's really cool about that too, is like I said, there'll be permanent records. There'll be a playlist for... each of us will have a playlist for each show. If we have a guest DJ, we'll build their playlist for them as well. So you'll have access to all those things. And if you're looking at the show notes or the download notes, the Spotify playlist will be right in there. So it will be really easy. And if you're on like an iTunes and it's a little difficult, just go to cigarcoop.com and click on the show and you'll have the Spotify playlist ready to go there.
Yeah, and I think the other great thing is for fans of Primetime and Cigar Coop, this sort of like just adds another dimension to the show, because we're not going to be talking a ton of cigar news and stuff like that. Like, Coop does an excellent job, like the best in the industry doing the news and stuff with the other things. So mainly here, it's mainly music centered. So if you're used to the Cigar Jukebox show, that's what it was. Like, we might talk about a cigar for like 10, 15 minutes. If Matt Booth's on, you might talk about a cigar for 2.5 minutes, and you might talk about other stuff. But it's mostly music, and this could be the same thing here. It's going to be a very music vibe where, you know, they're going to be talking cigars, but it's going to be a very music-centered show. So it's going to kind of be a good complement to the other Coop stuff you are listening to.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Like I said, it kind of gives me an avenue to explore outside of cigars a little more, which is something that I wanted to do. We're gonna smoke a cigar. We'll get into what we're smoking, you know, in a few minutes. So that's certainly something. But I think what you're gonna see music wise too with this show, this is not gonna be your top 40 playlists that you're gonna have on this show. I think both Dave and I we're good at going with deep cuts. And I think you'll get some deep, if you're really into some deep cuts, you're gonna get that. And what I like is, and as we were kind of planning the show, this kind of came out organically, is Dave's always done a great job with the new music, kind of uncovering these newer artists or these artists on the rise. And I'm kind of the opposite. I'm the retro guy that kind of lives in the past and goes back to that, right? And it was kind of funny. When Dave and I, when we were talking on a prep show, we both at this, I think you mentioned the idea to me. And I said, Dave, I was actually going to mention this idea to you. And that idea was to do a segment on new music. Because I think there's a lot that I know I can learn with that is certainly that our listeners can really learn about it too.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Get to do a bit of both. A bit of deep cuts, a bit of new music. We're going to do some exciting things. We're going to look at albums, just spend a whole show on one record. We're going to have different themes. And I guess the exciting thing is that it's also like cigars. I mean, music's a very unifying thing. Like everybody might like different music, but generally speaking, everybody likes music of some sort.
Yeah.
So it's a chance for you to like learn new bands or, you know, do your own pairing, have a cigar, figure out what songs sort of go with it. You can let us know. It's a good, it's a fun thing.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it certainly is. And there's a lot of ways you can, you know, you could pair music, you know, you can go anywhere from pairing it to the lyrics, to the instrumentation, to just the theme of the band. You know, there's a lot of different, there's no wrong answer to pair. It could just be, you're smoking a cigar and you want to have background music. So this is not a very complicated thing to do. It's kind of taking the two genres and bringing it together. And there's just a lot of creative ways. So I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. And I'm excited about this cigar.
Yes. So before we get into the cigar, we're going to be talking about our main story tonight. It's going to be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which the inductees were announced. Kind of ironic, okay, that we're doing a Hall of Fame show, because when we started one of the other shows, Special Edition, the story with that, if people haven't heard, is that's the show I do with Bear. Bear was like on Facebook one night talking about like cigar Hall of Famers. And I was very intrigued by this video, right? And it was like, he was really like, this guy's really good, right? He knows his stuff and he's really good. So I reached out to him, we talked, and he said, hey, if you like it so much, how about doing a show, right? I had this idea for a second show, which is Special Edition, which is more of a news magazine-y type show. But it was going to be a year off, right? So I said, well, let me give it a try, right, with Bear. And the next thing I know, he's been the host of Special Edition for 61 episodes so far. So
there you go.
So Hall of Famers played a role on that, starting that show, as it's playing on this show, right? And I think Dave and I, we wanted to pick an epic cigar.
Yes.
Again, I think this was kind of an organic thing. I think we both had the same idea. We're smoking the 100 Años Edición Especial, aka the La Aurora 100 Años Maduro.
And this harkens back to the Stogie Geeks when I listened to it. Because when I listened to Stogie Geeks, he did the cigars of the week. And I would always write them down and then chase them down here in Australia. And I couldn't find a place at the time that shipped these to Australia. So I actually, when I went to the States, I went to my local cigar place, which was Golden Leaf back in Minneapolis. It's a different name now, but it's back in Minneapolis. And they had them there. And I got to pick one up. And it is, you rated this, what is this, Oasis cigar, wasn't it?
Oasis cigar. It's the highest rated cigar on Coop numeric score-wise at a 98. And I'm doing Cigar of the Decade in January. And it's most likely a serious contender for one of the top spots. To say it isn't would be a lie. To say I've decided that is not final either. But it's going to be on that list very high for sure.
It's just a tremendous cigar. Like, it's so good.
You know, it's when La Aurora is on, I mean, this is a Connecticut broadleaf. over that Corcianos Maduro blend, a Corcianos blend, which is, you know, one of the legendary blends that you go back a decade ago. I mean, the run that cigar had in the previous decade, this cigar came out in, I think, late 2012, early 2013. It's on one side of the Robusto. It's a limited production cigar. They don't make it all the time. And you mentioned the Stogie Geeks days. This was probably, if we all had a cigar, like when we did a Stogie Geeks cigar of the year, I think we were all, Paul voted for, I remember, the Tatuai Black Label, but he had this number two. So we were all pretty close with that.
It's so good. I mean, it's just the flavors in it, like coffee, cocoa, and it's just rich and smokes extremely well. It's just an incredible cigar.
Yeah, I hate using the OG word, but this is the OJ. This is from the first batch that came out, that late 2012 batch. So I had this sitting in the humidor for what? The band was a little loose, but the cigar is not hard by any means, but that's why my secondary band came off. But nonetheless, these cigars just continue to perform. And I mean, when La Aurora Dave does a cigar and it's on, it's very hard to top them right now. They do some great blends here.
No, the cigar is tremendous. And so when we thought about, yeah, what cigar would you do for a Hall of Fame show? Like, you know, this obviously is. Yeah. I mean, and then like this is a Jose Blanco cigar.
Yeah.
In the industry, he's a Hall of Famer. So it's a Hall of Fame cigar made by, you know, someone that would undoubtedly be in the Cigar Hall of Fame. So it's just all around.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much he was involved with the Maduro. I think towards the end, this like was a project towards the end when he was there. But, the Cien Años project, that's Jose. That was really, Jose was very involved with that project. It's the cigar that really put La Aurora and him on the map at the start of this whole cigar boom thing. So. And actually, it was a little after the cigar boom, but, you know, this was, and it was, this, you know, Cien Años was the 100th anniversary cigar for La Aurora in 2003. That became an iconic line. The Maduro came out 10 years later, almost 10 years later. There is a Cameroon Cien Años that was floating around.
Right.
It was a shop exclusive for Burns Tobacconist. I don't know if it'll ever get re-released again. It was very good as well. I mean, it was an excellent Cameroon. I don't know if I put it at the Maduro level, but certainly as good a store-exclusive cigar as I've had.
Yeah, I always have a soft spot for La Aurora because some of my first cigars were La Aurora. Like, I love the La Aurora 107. I just love La Aurora. So I always like to get a good La Aurora release.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, La Aurora kind of gets a little lost today, at least when we cover it from the cigar media, and it's a little unfortunate. But when I was starting in cigar media 10 years ago, there wasn't a company more hands-on with the online media than La Aurora was. It's not that they've ignored. They're very accessible, and they do a great job. I just think there's a lot of – like La Aurora was one of the pioneers in terms of really – reaching out to online media, and now everyone does it today. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of not the trendy thing anymore.
Yeah. No, excellent cigar. If you can find some, pick them up.
Yeah. This is a cigar. And if you're a newer cigar enthusiast, it's not a cheap cigar. I mean, you're looking in the $15 to $20 range, except if you're a Dave is right. Which.
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, then it gets held by customs, and you got to tack on another $30.
Yeah, for folks who don't follow cigars, Dave has an issue like with customs and cigar taxes in Australia, which is like brutal, right? But chances are this is like a $15 to $20 cigar for most people outside of Australia. Yeah. It's a more expensive cigar. Would I say it's the first cigar you should smoke? No. Okay. But if you're starting to get into cigars, you can't go wrong with having a box of these. Put aside that, like I said, this is 6.5 years, almost 7 years old, and this is smoking incredible still.
Mm. No, yeah, I mean, it's amazing cigar.
Yeah. I get that little, that chock full of nuts coffee note, which is, and there's a sweetness from the broadleaf from the top, but yeah, it just all comes together with this cigar.
And it's not a heavy cigar either, you know what I mean? Like, it's got good body and stuff, but it's not heavy.
No, you know what's interesting, though? When I first reviewed it, I thought it was a beast, but it was because it was so new, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, they'll settle in nicely into a medium where, like you said, Dave, not gonna knock you over. Like I said, it wouldn't be the first cigar I'd recommend having.
No.
You can probably, you know, you know, a lot of people aren't Maduro cigar smokers. And a Maduro is a darker wrapper that undergoes a fermentation process. So, but still very good cigar at some point that I think you'd want to have in your collection.
Ooh, shall we get into the Hall of Fame, Coop?
Yeah, so let's get into the Hall of Fame. And I just want to mention one of our sponsors, Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra: create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce sticks that time and time again deliver on that promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. And you know, Robert Caldwell was a big part of both of our shows.
Yes.
Especially the Jukebox. He was very excited. And we were really glad that he agreed to come over and join us here with this. His support has been really, really good. So definitely check out some of the cigar. We'll put the Cigar Jukebox website so you can access all the old shows as well in there as well. Yeah. There's some good ones with Robert there.
Oh, the places he would do an interview, like one time it was like a cafe table in Prague, but having a coffee. Another time he was like walking to get his rental car.
It's not that he's disrespectful or anything.
No,
Robert.
But it's great.
Robert's a little scatterbrained, okay, but he always meets his commitments, which I really respect on that. Yeah.
No, and he always gave me tons of time, which I love because I mean he's just coming on the show, but he would definitely be down for this Hall of Fame talk because he's also big into music. Like he knows his music, he knows what he likes, and he always loves talking music, so he'd be all about this.
Yeah, and you know I'm gonna get pretty excited when we start getting into some of the guest DJs next year, because you'll see people from the cigar industry. And if you follow the cigar industry, you know these people have an incredible personality. And if you're not from the cigar industry, you're going to discover some of these people too. You know, these are small companies, but they become like celebrities in this small realm, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and I think because music's so personal, and like we'll get to that with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because that's one of my things about it. But that even though you don't know, I mean, you know these people from their cigar, maybe you met them at an event. But to hear him, guest DJ, talk about music, you feel like you get a bit more of a connection with them because, you know, listening to them talk about the music, why they like it. It's such a personal thing. You kind of get that connection.
Yeah. And if folks didn't hear the primetime episode 108 with Nick Perdomo, the interview I did with him, we kind of mutually, like we were talking about his drumming because Nick's a drummer. I mean, he goes to the big trade show and everyone wants to hear him drum. But what I found out is Nick's a huge Tears for Fears fan, which is one of my probably two or three favorite bands out there. And he's like deep cuts into Tears for Fears. So we're talking deep cuts into this stuff, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of cool that we have that. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame though.
Yeah.
Is a very polarizing topic. And I think you and I, well, for the most part, we agree on something. I think you and I have a difference of opinion in terms of the concept of the Hall of Fame here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, I don't know if the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't know if it's still relevant in the sense that because music is so personal, like if you ask the common person, oh, who got inducted last year? I mean, they might not even know. And then as well, like you look at some of the bands that aren't in the Hall of Fame and some of the bands that are, it's just, it's very hard to define. And I just don't know if it's as relevant as it used to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's tough to tell, right? Especially as we go into a newer generation. I think there's some validity that I think some of the older generation, like guys who are in their 50s like me, we kind of like it. Mm-hmm. We may disagree on if it's rock and roll. We're not going to debate tonight if it's rock and roll, right? I think we just kind of agreed are these Hall of Famers, these musicians, right? But, you know, I'll disagree. I heard Skip Martin of Romacraft Tobacco make this comment. I definitely put a baseball analogy on this, right? I want to see the body of work. I want to see the longevity, right? So I look at this as the Baseball Hall of Fame has some very strict criteria. And for the most part, I think it should be very difficult to get into the Hall of Fame. So
yeah, I mean, I guess that's where we differ in the sense that that's why I don't know if it has its relevance, because you could have, like, say, Jeff Buckley, right?
Right.
Who put out a couple albums before he died, and then maybe one, like, after he died came out of a collection of his stuff. But he had a really big impact on music. So you could be like, well, because of his impact, should it be Hall of Fame? Whereas one of the people up for induction, which is, if I look at my list, because I'm very prepared today. Oh, like you look at, you know, Dave Matthews Band. Now, Dave Matthews Band has been around since like the dawn of time. Like they've been around forever and have a very large catalog. But I would argue that I don't think they have close to the impact that like a Jeff Buckley does with 1/10 the catalog.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, I agree. I mean, when we go through some of these who we picked and maybe who we didn't pick, I'm agreeing with you on that. Then you have these other scenarios like, you know, Bill Haley and the Comets, right? They did not have a Hall of Fame career. That was not a Hall of Fame band. But the importance, the landmark importance to, quote unquote, not just rock, but contemporary music. I understand why people don't like the baseball analogy. I just think that they should be more like founding fathers, not in there as performers, you know. And I think they have a little bit of that too. I don't want to say they don't, but I think there is a difference with that.
I mean, it's sort of like, to make a football analogy sort of on the fly, it's sort of like Bo Jackson versus, you know, like Emmitt Smith or somebody.
Right.
Emmitt Smith has been around forever. Bo Jackson was like this comet and then got injured and then couldn't play.
Right.
And it's like, oh, but you know, when he could play, it was just so electric. And it's sort of like that, I guess.
Yeah, I do see that. Certainly, that's a good analogy there. You know, the one thing I would really like to see is I'd like to see instrument performers get in under the craft. So, you know, like a Jimmy Page, like for a guitarist, right? You know, Neil Peart for a drummer. I that's what I would like to see the Hall of Fame evolve into more, where those pieces of the puzzle get recognized.
Yeah, they tend to only do that with like lead vocalists that then go solo. So say like there's been a couple that have been, the bands have gotten in, but then they've also gotten in as a solo artist.
Yeah, I think like Paul McCartney is a good example of that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think all the Beatles are in as solo artists, if I'm not mistaken.
But like, yeah, so you get that, but you don't get that with instrumentalists. Like you wouldn't get, say, Led Zeppelin and then like Jimmy Page.
Right.
Whereas Jimmy Page is in multiple bands, or Eric Clapton.
Right.
Like he might be in there solo and then with Cream, but like he's a front man, like he's a vocalist as well. So it's sort of, yeah, you don't really get that with anyone other than vocalists.
Yeah. No, I agree with you on that. You know, the other interesting thing, this is an observation. This is an opinion. Yeah. So I've followed this like the Baseball Hall of Fame since 1988 when this was all starting. What I've noticed is, and we could talk about the bias of the committee that votes on this, right?
Yeah.
And that's a whole, but I have noticed they have not been kind to bands that have switched personnel a lot.
Yep.
So if you look at like bands like Chicago, if you look at bands like Journey, they took a long time to get in. And I think they – even Van Halen took a long time to get – now, some of it may say there was a bias against progressive and hard rock, but I think it's the switching of the – I really think it was the switching of the personnel they look at. And, in fact, when they inducted Van Halen, I don't think Sammy Hagar was inducted.
No, I don't – I'd have to look. I don't – probably not.
I don't think he was. And I think Eddie was in rehab, and I don't think David Lee Roth showed up. So it was kind of like Michael Anthony and Alex were there. That was it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is just my thing, but you could see – I think the other problem with the Hall, like to use your baseball analogy, like the baseball, you see who people – you can see the votes, right? Like you get like X person got X percentage of votes. They didn't make it. These people voted for whoever, right? Like you can see like, oh, this person came in as a, you know, unanimous. With the Hall, it's just like, and here they are. It's like, here's the inductees and here they are. So you don't get, and the problem with that is they have a long history of not a lot of women in the Hall of Fame.
No.
You know, at all. And they're just getting caught up on the hip hop stuff. And so it's really dominated by like male-led kind of 50s and 60s bands.
Bluesy and the bluesy stuff. Yeah, that's what I tend to see, yeah.
You don't really see, and the problem, I think, is that as a music fan, there's no real transparency in that process. It's just like, these are in, these are not. You know, so you get, like this year, like Kate Bush and some other people were on the nominee list last year.
And weren't on this year.
In, and they're not this year. So it's like, well, so they were good last year, and now they're not, like, what? So I think that's another problem. It's like, well, how are these getting selected?
Yeah, and it's gotten more complicated this year in that they added a fan vote component to it, which I am not really sure how that fits in, other than it's not going to be crowdsourced. So, but there's going to be input, I guess, based on this fan vote, right? Which is going to make this more controversial. And when we go through at the end, I'll go through who's leading the fan vote, which I think is very interesting how that happened. I actually was following that. So you're right. There's no consistency with that.
Well, I think the problem, too, with the Hall of Fame is, for people that don't know, I think it's like 25 years after your first release.
And that's a little – that could be – how do you define the first release? I've seen some discrepancies.
Is it a single? Is it a record? Is it an EP? Like, yeah.
Are you distributed on a major label or not? Yeah. So it is complicated. Yeah. I think the 25-year-old rule, though. I like a longevity rule.
Yeah, but I think the problem with, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame – is that music is so organic and it changes like so quickly, like trends, things like that, that these inductee lists come out and they don't really stay relevant to trends. So it always seems, you know, a bit outdated and a bit static, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on that for sure. And like I said, one thing was like the progressive rock people really took a long time to even get nominated. I mean, those only started in the last 10 years, really, where the progressive bands started making their way in.
Yeah. And I mean, but like with anything, I kind of liken it to like the Cigar Aficionado Top 25. Like, you know, you could say, oh, they're biased and how does, you know, what's the voting like and whatever. But if anything, it's a list of music that's good to debate. And if you haven't listened to some of these bands, it's like a list of bands you can check out and you might like some of them. So,
yep.
Just for the fact of like just some fuel to sort of talk music, I think it's you know good for that.
Yeah, you know, and it's like one variable is that, you know, have the quality of the music versus how much commercial success they've had, and I keep cringing. Is Taylor Swift someday going to be a Hall of Famer? Like I cringe.
That's like with Dave Matthews Band, like one of the lot of because I don't. I mean, I love Dave Matthews Band.
I do too, but I think you and I are in agreement on this.
I just don't see the impact to music. I just don't. I mean,
the concerts I do get, they have a huge following on the concert circuit.
Yeah, I know. But then you're getting that same argument you talked about. Like, why are you in the Hall of Fame? Because you put on good concerts. It's like, how do you determine that? Like,
yeah, Humphries McGree has a great concert following. They're not Hall of Famers. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we can go on and on about why I dislike the Hall of Fame. But it makes for a good show because it's great bands.
Yeah. Yep. So let me give you the official list of the nominees. Okay, we'll go through the list of the nominees.
Let's do it.
And then Dave and I are going to pick three people we think should be in, and we'll talk about a song that we have associated with them.
Yeah.
Okay. So the nominees are Pat Benatar. This is her first nomination. The Dave Matthews Band, their first nomination. Depeche Mode. They've been eligible since 2006. This is their third nomination.
Yeah, they've been up for a while.
Yep, they've been up for a while. The Doobie Brothers, who have been up since 1996, have their first nomination. 24 years. 23 plus 1996. 24 years, and they finally got a nomination.
See, here's my thing, really quick, if I could rant.
Yeah, no, this is good.
It's not like the Doobie Brothers like just put out this record last year that's amazing. It's like, well, what? What? Why? Like, what?
How is this? Yeah, how is this changed? Now I'm gonna say something. This is not a great crop of nominees, in my opinion. No. These are a lot of these. You can make the case if they're left off, they're left off. There's no one. I can say that. You know, maybe.
I think the ones we pick are kind of standouts in this list.
Yeah. Whitney Houston, her first nomination, but she's been eligible since 2009, so 10 years.
Okay.
Judas Priest.
Yes.
eligible since 1999. It's their second nomination, but they were nominated 2 years ago. Now, this is a band folks may not have heard of in the U.S. a lot, and I know we'll talk about them a little more. Kraftwerk.
Yep.
This is their sixth time nominated. So they've been to the party a lot. Yep. MC5, five nominations.
Now with MC5, it kind of goes into our not really the large catalog.
Right. And yeah. But,
yeah.
But the quality of work.
Yep.
Yep. Motorhead. First nomination. This is gonna be an interesting one. I know. Nine Inch Nails. This is their third nomination. Notorious B.I.G. This is his first year of eligibility first nomination. Rufus featuring Chaka Khan. Fourth time nominated. Now, this is where you mentioned earlier. I don't think Rufus featuring Chaka Khan had a Hall of Fame body of work. You can make an argument that Chaka is borderline in that. Great voice.
I'd agree with Chaka Khan, yeah.
But again, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, I can't see that looking at that body of work because you're not including Chaka's solo work there now. Another interesting one, and this is the second year in a row he's been nominated, but he's been eligible since 1995, Todd Rundgren.
Yeah.
Soundgarden, first nomination. T-Rex, eligible since 1993. This is their first nomination. And Thin Lizzy, eligible since 1996, their first nomination.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And this is just me, and this might be a hot take. You know, another person I think would be dying to be on this conversation would be Seth Big Tuna. He's probably screaming at his computer right now at some of these bands, but I just looking at the list, some of these bands look like someone said, well, we got to put out a list.
Right. So. This was like one of those years in the Baseball Hall of Fame again, where, well, we got to put someone in this year, right?
Yeah. It's sort of like a really bad basketball team. The person that leads in points, it's like, well, someone's got to score. Not going to have zero.
Right. So. I understand there's like a very competitive year. This is not one of them.
No, this is not one of those. And I think Master Sensei, Eric from Cigar Dojo, I think some of these too, like Todd Rundgren, the music he put out didn't have a lot of wide sort of listening, but his producing and the music he put out was so influential to people that made bands.
Exactly.
It's sort of like a Velvet Underground thing. It's sort of like the famous quote, I can't remember who it was, it said about Velvet Underground, is like they sold 100 albums, but everybody that bought it made their own band. At the time, Velvet Underground, they weren't popular within the masses, but they were so influential on like future music that, they had a big name.
If you can't name three albums that these artists have had, they haven't had the impact. I don't think people can name three Todd Rundgren albums, let alone three.
No.
Some people would struggle with three Todd Rundgren songs.
Oh, yeah. But
Think of Me and Bang on Your Drum. I get it. They're iconic. But then you start to get down, and it's very difficult. So, I'm not one to say this is to give them a participation trophy in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, but that's sort of like, for me, that's where I think the Hall of Fame is – pointless in the sense that you have these really influential people that really influence music, quote unquote, but like no one would know about them. So it's sort of like, well, what criteria are you using? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very difficult. Like Brian Eno would be the same thing. Like a lot of people might be able to pick out Brian Eno's songs.
Right.
But his production and his influence on music is
immense.
U2.
I mean, yeah, you look at what he did for U2.
But like your average person, you're like, what's your favorite Brian Eno song? And like, I don't know.
Quincy Jones is another one. I mean, Quincy Jones has won an album of the year for Grammy. But again, the body of work of Quincy Jones is with Michael Jackson. I mean, that was a,
And I think that's where the Hall of Fame gets into problems is that music's so subjective. So they have this sort of really kind of vague what a Hall of Famer is. And so it makes it very difficult to sort of, wrap your head around, well, how are they assessing these.
Yeah.
But let's get into the songs, Coop.
All right, we'll get into the songs. And I'm assuming that these are three, like we picked three each. And these are people that we think, based on this list, should be inducted this year into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's ones that aren't on these lists out of this that I think should be in. One's the songs that we haven't picked. It's just that I happen to choose, you know.
Right, I agree. I agree. And, you know, I totally agree with you on that.
Who wants to kick? Should I kick it off? You want to kick it off?
You can kick it off.
I'm going to kick it off. This song by this artist is a little teaser into
Not just kidding.
This is a teaser to a common theme that I'm going to have throughout the segments of the show. And this is Whitney Houston. I just think in terms of, especially like women in R&B and music and stuff like that, like highly influential, you know, she sort of, if you're looking at like what makes a Hall of Famer, she sort of ticks all the boxes. Very well known, very well regarded, highly influential within the music industry. I think she has to be in there. The song that I picked was a cover actually. But is I Will Always Love You was the song I would pick for Whitney.
And it's a solid, that's a quintessential Whitney Houston pick. It was one of her biggest hits.
Yep.
You know, so I don't think, do you think, let me ask you something, Dave, you know, and the song was I Will Always Love You.
Yep.
Do you think Whitney got, I mean, I hate to say this, he passed away on time, she had an untimely death, obviously. Do you think that kind of maybe accelerated her case to get in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I mean, possibly, because then people revisit the music. I mean, you sort of have that when musicians pass away. So, like, Aretha Franklin was sort of like that. Like, Aretha Franklin is extremely good, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But people are like, oh, my God, she's way better than I thought. So I think that happens with music. People sort of take it for granted, and then they go back to it. So I wouldn't be adverse to that. But I think the music still stands on its own. I just think maybe more people listen to it that would have normally.
Yeah. Yeah, so in terms of that, I think when you listen to this song, though, I will always love it. Not my favorite Whitney song, right? But if you want to get an idea for what Whitney's strength was, then it was her voice, right? That was the key. Well, yeah. That song's gonna really accentuate her voice. You know, she covered Chaka Khan's "I'm Every Woman," and did a really good job. Yep. We did a cover show on Dave's whole thing. That she did a hell of a job with that "I'm Every Woman" cover, and paid a lot of her. She actually performed it with Chaka, I think, once too.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, Coop, kick us off your list here.
All right, so we're gonna stick with the female theme here. I'm gonna go Pat Benatar.
Yep.
All right, and now here's the thing about Pat Benatar. I think she gets hurt a little because of her association with her husband Neil Giraudo, who's a guitar player and a songwriter. And I think they're kind of joined at the hip a lot. Mm-hmm. So that may hurt it a little in terms of a lot of, you know, Neil Giraudo is a fantastic musician, by the way. That's not, he's not just he's not just there for the ride. He's really good. And, you know, Pat Benatar, if you look at the period from like 1980 to 85, that's when she was at her peak, right? I think the best album she did was Seven the Hard Way.
Yeah.
That was in 85, and there was a song that I would say, I don't want to say it's a very deep track, but it was kind of one of those mid tracks that got some airplay. The song's La Belage. And I love that song. Okay. It's got a very European type of feel to it. It's not as hard rock. It's not as hard rock maybe as some of her other stuff, but there's still some hard guitar work in there too. If you watch the video, she's smoking a cigarette in the video. Like, you would not see that today. So, La Belage, to me, again, where's Pat Benatar's strength? She's getting in because of her voice. And her voice is fantastic on that song.
No, can't fault Pat Benatar.
Yeah. So, I think Pat Benatar, in my opinion, she's a little less of a body of work than I would like to see out of a Hall of Fame. Like I said, I think it was like a six-year window, really, 5-6-year window. But nonetheless, I think it was enough. She had a bunch of albums during that time, and I think it was enough to. And she certainly has kept her fan base over the years. So I'm gonna vote Pat Benatar, and La Belage is the song I selected. And you can follow these, like I said, on each of our playlists.
Yeah, and I tried to put them in order.
Yeah, I think we did the same thing. Yeah.
My next one is pretty much all on influence, really. And if you listen to these tracks now, they came out in like 79.
Right.
And they look like they could have made them last week.
Yep.
And that is Kraftwerk. I went with Kraftwerk, and I went with Autobahn, because kind of their biggest song, I think, or the most well-known. And kind of the sort of pioneers of electronic music.
That totally.
Kind of is, and nowadays, like, electronic music is in everything. It's in pop music, it's in rap, it's its own thing. It's everywhere.
But this is early 70s, you go back with them, yeah.
Yeah, but you listen to Autobahn, and you're like, this could have been made last week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has, you know, like, it has aged really well. So I think Kraftwerk should get in.
That's going to be an interesting one. They've also a band that has had a lot of turnover. I think that's hurt them over the years. But they still tour, and I'd say, again, they're much more of a presence in Europe right now.
Yeah. I think the style of music hurts them as well.
I think it does too.
I don't think the panel wants to put in like electric, like EDM electric music but in there.
But it was a key part of, you know, here's the thing. I think that's wrong if they do that. Yeah. Because
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's I think it's a voter bias thing as well. But
yeah.
Your next one, Coop.
All right.
Look at my list here. All oh right. Yeah.
Get into it. And there was an announcement with these guys today. That Michael McDonald is rejoining them on tour.
Really?
Yes. This was just announced this morning. It's the Doobie Brothers.
Nice.
The Doobie Brothers, again, I think they've been hurt. Again, we mentioned they haven't been nominated. They've been hurt by the you know, they had some turnover. Tom Johnson was replaced by Michael McDonald. Then Michael McDonald left. Tom Johnson comes back. But they've kind of still maintained, I think, a decent friendship. I don't think it's been acrimonious, really, for the most part lately. There may have been some earlier. I think that the Doobies really – they had about an 8 or 9 year run, I would say. And then they made this comeback in 89, which I thought was really cool. But they kind of were a fusion of Southern rock and Motown.
Yep.
So Tom Johnson and Pat Simmons bring that Southern rock piece. Michael McDonald brought that whole Motown piece. And I'll tell you again, you talk about the ultimate yacht rock radio guy.
Yes,
Michael right. McDonald is the yacht rock radio guy, right? Taking It to the Streets to me is I can argue it's the best. It's a more popular track. I can argue it's the best track that they've done. I think the cover of Take Me in Your Arms is certainly good, but I think this one, you know, it's just a feel good song. And in my opinion, it's some of the best work they've done.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know if it's a Hall of Fame band. Very solid band. I think most people hear the Doobie Brothers like, oh yeah, I like them all right. But yeah, I mean, I you know, I'm not gonna fault it. But I just think, I mean, for me, maybe not a Hall of Fame as much as they're pretty solid. But
I think in all these cases, you can make an argument that against these artists getting in.
Way.
Yeah, you really can. This is not, you know, I think for someone my age, I'm going to be 52, I think we say, how are the Doobie Brothers not in there? But I have, like, you know, sons who are in their 20s. They're like, who the hell are the Doobie Brothers haven't had that impact over there? And I think you can make that argument with the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the problem. But I got... So this, my last one, I picked Nine Inch Nails, and I think I cheated on this one a bit in that Nine Inch Nails, I think, was really influential in that sort of like industrial sort of rock sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
And I love them, but I think I cheated in the sense that like, it's hard for me to divorce Nine Inch Nails from Trent Reznor, and Trent Reznor's had a lot of impact post Nine Inch Nails with like soundtracks and movie scores and production, and so I think part of my Nine Inch Nails gets clouded in Trent Reznor and me like respecting Trent Reznor's work, which isn't necessarily the same as saying Nine Inch Nails, but I picked Nine Inch Nails. I went with the track, kind of the track kind of off their initial album. Was Head Like a Hole was the track that I chose. But you know what I mean? Like, you have those bands that's like, it's hard to divorce. Like, the Smiths are like that for me. It's hard to divorce how much I like the Smiths to how much I like Johnny Marr and what he's done sort of since the Smiths, it's hard for me to do that. So
yeah, I
think
agree.
Nine Inch Nails benefit from, you know, what Trent Reznor has done since them. But yeah, that, I chose them.
I always associate them as a Beavis and Butthead band. That's fair. Not a knock on. That's not a knock on it. But it was like one of those, like, you know, Beavis and Butthead had those bands that they liked. Like yeah. there was some of the core stuff that they like, and then they'd like Tom Jones, something weird, right? But this was right. Like a core band that Beavis and Butthead would sit in front of the TV and watch videos of it. And it was, yeah. You know, so yeah, I, you know, and that's again, that's, that, I, but I like what you said about Trent. That's an interesting analogy that I hadn't thought of that angle till you said that.
Because it's hard with because Nine Inch Nails is like a two-piece band or something. So it's hard to kind of like, if one of them does all this stuff, it's kind of hard as opposed to, say, if you have a four- or five-piece band and one person goes on and do a bunch of stuff. Like, say, Radiohead, right, with, like, Tom York's solo stuff and what he's done. Even though they're in the Hall of Fame, it's hard to sort of divorce the two things for yep. me anyway.
No, good point, good point.
I love your last one, Coop. Love it. I was all surprised they weren't in the Hall of Fame, to be honest.
I'm surprised on this one, too, and I think they're getting in on this one. I really do. Judas Priest, they sold 50 million albums. I mean, they're they still are popular, right? I'm picking a little bit of a controversial track from them, okay? Because I remember when this album came out, people thought maybe Judas Priest was selling out a bit to the mainstream music. And I think there was a little bit of that, but I'm picking Turbo Lover. I mean, that song to me, I'm on a motorcycle. This is the song I want to play in the car with Seth in Vegas.
Nice.
Driving. I'm going to play this song in the car with Seth in Vegas. You just kind of, you accelerate and to me, Turbo Lover. I think today people look more kindly on Turbo Lover and the Turbo album than they did back in 1986 when it came out.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like I said, we all love Breaking the Law, right? I mean, that was, we'd all go around high school singing Breaking the Law, Breaking the Law. But Turbo was real. I thought Turbo, they brought us more synthesizers and it showed Judas Priest, to me, it showed another side of Judas Priest. And it's still, like I said, it's become one of the more popular. I think time was very kind to it. And I think people today look very kindly on Turbo Lover.
I was surprised they weren't in, because it's sort of like all the bands that Judas Priest inspired got in the Hall of Fame, but Judas Priest didn't get in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know.
It was bizarre.
You know, and I was in I think the metal movement, if you want to say, started in the like late 70s, early 80s. And Judas Priest was like, I mean, people would have Judas Priest logos on their loose leaf binders, and you know, they'd be wearing Judas Priest denim jackets and patches. Everyone was talking Judas Priest. They've sold a lot of albums, and you know, they're respected in the metal community, and they have, you know, their members are solid musicians as well.
Well, I mean, another band that's not in, Iron Maiden.
Yeah,
they're not in either, and I think this gets to, as well, you're starting to get at that bias of the committee.
Yeah,
because like it's like, I don't know how you argue Judas Priest and Iron Maiden weren't influential to music when you look at Metallica and all these other bands. Like they, you know.
Yeah, I totally.
How can you not do that?
You know, we can critique another organization, the Grammys, right? Till the cows come home. That's another topic, right?
Yeah.
But I'll say this, the Grammys at least was smart enough when metal started making a hit, they came out with a category for metal. They realized it needed a category. Well, same with hip hop and rap, right time was rap. So I'll give them some credit on that with that.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Hall of Fame, what they like is they like male led bands,
yep.
Four piece that are blues guitar focused.
That have not changed, like, members. Yep.
Yeah, like your Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, you know, like those sorts of things. Like guitar forward, got your classic lead guitarist, male vocal, 60s, late 60s, early 70s band. I mean, that's who they like.
Yep.
Because I got a list here, Coop, of people that aren't in.
Go ahead.
Iron Maiden's not in.
Right.
The Pixies aren't in. The Smiths aren't in.
Hector, I know, is lobbying for the Smiths.
Yep.
Hector Alfonso. Yeah.
Dionne Warwick, not in. Kate Bush, we said.
Psychic Friends Network don't count, I guess. Yeah.
For all my punk friends out there, Fugazi and Black Flag not in.
No.
Which is surprising. Bootsy Collins not in individually.
No.
Which is crazy. Cher's not in, which is insane.
Yep.
And like we talked about, Kate Bush was up for it and then off it, and then who knows? Carol King, The Hollies, Nick Drake, like a lot of these. Joe Cocker's not in.
Carol King should be in. Yeah, Carol King should absolutely be in.
But so it's a. There's a lot of. It's hard to tell. And then, like you said, a lot of people, you know, eligible for 10, 15 years, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, let's, you know. But all the people that aren't in. I'll start off with mine.
Yep.
So I picked this now because the other thing that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tried to do is like expand past rock and roll, like past guitar driven music. That's why we got Notorious B.I.G., which I think he should be in.
I know Skip is lobbying for him, and I don't think he has a long enough body of work. That's my issue with him.
I'm just going on like impact on the scene.
I understand. Yeah, I do understand. That's where this is kind of. I understand the baseball now. You falls down with that, so I totally get
Skip,
that. Yeah.
Skip, if you're listening, the other group not in. Eric B and Rakim not in. They should be in. But anyway, LL Cool J not in. Should be in. But I went with Dolly Parton.
This was a surprise. It was a surprise pick, but it was a very intriguing pick.
Yeah. Now they did it with Johnny Cash. With the argument being that his music, like, went across genre. So, like, Johnny Cash did, like, Nashville Skyline, did stuff with, like, Joni Mitchell, did stuff with Bob Dylan, did stuff with U2. He covered Nine Inch Nails songs. Like, he was sort of, like, across the divide. And I would say the same thing with Dolly Parton, that Dolly Parton's influence, like, she's known as country, but her influence, I think, kind of goes across both. So, for example, Whitney Houston... That song is a Dolly Parton cover.
Yes.
And the other song I have on the playlist is one of my favorite covers of all time, is the White Stripes covering Jolene.
Yeah.
So she has an influence over both. I think she should be in because it's sort of more more like Music Hall of Fame.
But they've kept country. They've kept the country people at a distance.
So far, Johnny Cash, I think.
I understand. Yeah.
I think there's some. I think there's some really old country people, like Patsy Cline, maybe. I think there's some old ones they sort of like ushered in as like founders or whatever.
But Alabama. Alabama's not in.
Miles Davis. They have Miles Davis as well in for some under something.
Yeah, Miles. I know Miles did some of the hip hop stuff towards the end. But yeah, in general, I don't think that's why he got in.
But I want Dolly Parton in. And so the song I chose is the one that I talked about being covered by the White Stripes. And that's Dolly Parton with Jolene.
Andrew, you know, that's a good pick. And the thing is, I tell you what, I'm a big fan of that duet she did with Kenny Rogers, Islands in the Stream.
Oh, Islands in the Stream, yeah.
And that's a Bee Gees song, by the way. But I don't know. You know, if I want to get like sappy, romantic, dojo romantic, like he likes those
Hallmark movies. Yeah.
That's a pretty romantic song. It's a feel good song, and her vocals are spectacular. Her and Kenny Rogers. They do a better job than the Bee Gees on that, and I'll be honest with that.
Coop's got one that I'm gonna let you rant about this band not being in.
Yeah. You know, I could have picked. You know, there were a couple of others I was looking at right beforehand. I was looking at Bryan Adams, right, mm-hmm. and I was also looking at Bruce Hornsby not getting it, right. Mm-hmm. Maybe when we do a show next year, I'll kind of use those as a case. But I had to go to one of my core bands, and the band is INXS. To me. They should be in. They had 11 albums. They were worldwide sensation. They did the Wembley concert, sold out. Now, again, I understand you can't base it on one concert, but to sell out Wembley Stadium as easily as they did shows the impact. The body of work is consistent.
Impeccable.
I mean, I understand some – I think – by the time X came out, which was the 10th album, they were already Hall of Famers. I understand the last three albums weren't as big, and I understand that maybe You don't like the J.D. Fortune era. But what these guys did, just kind of what they did for Australian music, and I know you could more about that piece, you know, being from Australia, incredible. Now, I picked the song I went a deeper track, and I picked a live cut of this track, which will be on the Spotify playlist of The Stairs, which is from the X album. To me, it's probably the best, some of the best instrumentation. I know I talked about this when we did an NXS show on Jukebox. It's a powerful song. It's a song that's very eerie because Michael Hutchins, who passed away in 1997, it was almost prophetic of his own demise, and some of the lyrics in that song. And when you listen to it, it's haunting because there's just a lot. I mean, it's, you know, you know, the nature of your tragedy is chained around your neck. I mean, it's just, you know, he obviously was hung in a hotel room 7 years later. It was a little freaky, but nonetheless, it's a, in the live version to me, just shows, it shows that the perform, how they perform it as well. It's just really good stuff. They should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame, and they haven't even been nominated, which is a shame.
Yeah, that's surprising.
I don't know if they'll ever get in. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if they ever get in.
The only thing I can think of as them not being nominated is just not the, the committee not really valuing kind of 80s pop, I guess. Because I don't know why else.
Yeah, and honest. I think Brian Adams falls into that category a lot. And
I think Phil
Collins,
into that
Cher, Phil Collins. And I think Hornsby gets hurt by that because he started out as a top 40 artist. It was really in the 90s when he transformed himself. So yeah, I think you're, if something changes with the committee over time, maybe it comes out. The fact that NXS isn't performing any more doesn't help their case.
No, but that's the only thing I think of.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah, you know, I thought when Michael died, maybe they would get in 2005 and, you know, the first year of eligibility because they were started in 80. And then that's when they did the whole reality show thing. And I'm sure that didn't set well with committee members. So I think that hurt them as well.
I just want to mention, Coop gets powered by Diet Coke. I am powered by Cherry Coke.
Yeah, I'm actually out of Diet Coke right now. But yeah, that's good. Diet Coke and Cherry Coke are the official soft drinks of Primetime Jukebox. And Diet Coke's the official soft drink of all Primetime shows.
I have to, like, hunt this down in Australia.
Yeah.
Imported.
Wow. There you go. Wow. It's not, yeah, that's a treat for you guys. You know, it's weird. You go to other countries, it's Coca-Cola Light, too, not Diet Coke.
Really? Light?
Yeah, Nicaragua, it's Coca-Cola Light.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird. But no, I mean, yeah, Hall of Fame, there's problems. I think it's pointless. But, like I said, it creates for great discussion.
Let me do one more thing before we wrap up the Hall of Fame segment, okay?
Do it.
So the fan votes, as of now, okay? So this is, we're going into, like, this show will air on the 23rd of November.
Can I guess who's getting good fan votes?
Oh, yeah. You want to guess who's getting a good fan vote? Have you looked at the list?
No.
Okay. Tell me who are getting the good fan votes.
I'm going to guess, like, Whitney and Notorious. I would say Depeche Mode. I think Depeche Mode should be in, too. I would say Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney. Maybe. Those are my three that are getting good fan votes.
Okay. I'm going to go in order, top to bottom.
Here we go.
Number one, the Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah.
Number two, Pat Benatar.
Mm.
Number three, the Doobie Brothers.
Yep.
Number four, Soundgarden.
Yes. Okay.
Number five, Judas Priest.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. And Dave Matthews is killing this, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
number six was Depeche Mode.
Okay.
Number seven was Whitney Houston.
Okay.
Number eight was Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy?
Yep.
A lot of Liz heads out there.
Yeah. This one, number nine, was Motorhead.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Number 10 was Nine Inch Nails.
Yep.
Number 11 was Todd Rundgren.
I would say Todd Rundgren was going to be number last. So that's, yeah, I'm impressed.
Yep. I have some theories on this. Number 12, T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
Number 13, Notorious B.I.G.
Really?
Yeah. Number 14 was Kraftwerk. Number 15 was Rufus with Chaka Khan, featuring Chaka Khan.
MC5 is looking a bit.
MC5 was at the bottom. So this is why I don't think you can fan vote this, okay? Because I think the people who are voting on this, right? I get there's a big Dave Matthews contingent out there. But I mean, the Doobie Brothers, Judas Priest, are coming, and Soundgarden. I think there's a long time fan base. You know, I think it's people maybe from like 40 to 55 making these votes.
Yeah.
Which is why I think that age group wasn't the biggest Whitney Houston fans.
No, or Notorious B.I.G.
Or the biggest Notorious B.I.G. fans. Mm. And certainly not Rufus and Chaka Khan fans. So I think if I had a guess, and I don't know what the demographic is of this, I would say that, and there were 4 million votes, 4,584,305 votes cast, and Dave Matthews had 535,041 of those votes.
So there was I would say that the demographic is us.
Yeah.
White dudes between like 40 and like 55.
Yeah. So, again, that's not a knock on Notorious B.I.G., but I do think, you know, and I don't know, I do know that Pat Benatar on her Facebook page has been pushing for people to do the vote. So it's kind of like the cigar industry when you do these votes for Cigar Journal and Tobacco Business.
Yeah.
It's the same type of thing. So.
And I think Dave Matthews Band, what might help them is that they're still highly active.
They're still highly active. How the committee weighs this, because they are the next biggest vote. They have 535,000. Pat Benatar has 476,000. And you could vote for five people. And just keep in mind, so there's
– right.
So that's the – you know.
I don't.
That's what I'm saying. I think Pat Benatar has benefited from some crowdsourcing with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but good for her.
Yep.
I mean
But, yeah, like I said, we were talking about the Doobies. I was surprised they were three. But, again, I don't think it's my 20-year-old son voting in this thing.
No.
Yeah. So I was a little surprised Depeche Mode was sixth. That surprised me. That part, yeah. That, I always thought they would have been top five.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I thought Notorious B.I.G. would have been a little higher still.
I think it's demographic with that one.
I think it is, too.
I would say.
I think it is, too.
Because you look at a lot of those bands that are top six are kind of – we're big either like when we were in high school or when we were in college.
Yep.
So a lot of people probably have fond memories of a lot of those bands.
Yeah, and like I said, the you know, again, who's going to the Judas Priest concerts are probably people my age these days.
they're not really listening to Notorious B.I.G., you don't think.
No. Yeah, so it's it's interesting. I the Moody Blues are a concert you should actually – it's very interesting. That's like the ultimate geriatric concert.
Oh, it would be, yeah.
I mean, there's it's all senior citizens rocking away at a Moody Blues concert. And this was 10 years ago, so yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we move into the New Music 45 segment. But before that, I want to mention our sponsor, Cigar Hustler. Be sure to visit them on the web at www.cigarhustler.com or visit their store in Deltona, Florida, which I've had an opportunity to do. They got a great selection of products, a lot of boutique products. If you're looking for anything at Anika Sueño, which is Romacraft, there's no better place to go to that. I'll have to see if he's got any Bacas. I don't know. But I was a little late getting some Bacas, which is an excellent cigar. But definitely check out, support those guys, www.cigarhustle.com. Mike and Greg, they do a fantastic job there. Good people. And be sure to listen to a Cigar Hustlers podcast as well.
That's right.
They're doing a nice job. That show is really gaining some traction there. And, you know, like I said, they do a really good job with that.
And a cigar I know that you're getting into, Coop, is Mike's cigar, Postana.
Yeah.
Which is out there.
Postana was a brand that we just didn't have access to in North Carolina. So I know you kind of sent me some of them, and then I got a chance to try some of them down at the store when I was down in Deltona earlier this year. And it's, like I said, just a great place to go. Great store. Like I said, you're in between – they're closer to Daytona Beach, but they're only about like 40 minutes without traffic maybe from downtown Orlando. So, make it a destination to go see the Cigar Hustle. And if you can't, you know, they got a great selection on their website as well.
Yeah, so we got the New Music 45, which is a carryover from when I used to do the Hustler 45.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Cigar Hustler, over at Cigar Jukebox. And a 45, for all you music heads out there, it's got an A and a B side.
Right.
So with – The 45s, we'll have them every show, and it's going to be an A and a B side of new music. So music that's come out in the last year.
Okay. Are these newer? How new are these artists, would you say?
Oh, the artists might not be new, but these are records they put out in the last year.
Okay.
So it's records, some artists you may not ever have heard
right,
of.
Right.
Some like Bruce Hornsby, who put out a record this year, which is very good.
Yep.
Might be artists you've heard of. So it's just records that come out, and I'm going to try to have a different music podcast each 45 for you to listen to. Because I always get asked, where do you hear about all these bands and all this music? And so it's usually from podcasts. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
So side A, this goes out to Seth, Big Tuna. This is Lana Del Rey. So Lana Del Rey has a new album out. It is called Norman Effing Rockwell. And she has an F and a star and everything on the record album.
Okay.
So
right.
Probably she could sell it at Target or whatever.
Right.
So Lana Del Rey's been kicking around for a while, like ever since about 2013, 2014. She's never really broken through. Like she's had some great songs, but never really broken through. I think this album's going to be the one. It's got my two most favorite songs of the year on it. And the track I chose for side A is probably one of my... It's my second favorite song on the track. It's called Mariner's Apartment Complex. And it's a great song. She produces and arranged a lot of the music on the record. And the production on the record is excellent. So not only is she an excellent musician, but we got some great production as well. So that would be my side A, is that Lana Del Rey song, Mariner's Apartment Complex. Seth is also a big fan of this record. It's a great record.
I have this song, right? Mm-hmm. Very intriguing, and it's a good song. It's a very good song. For folks who know, I grew up in Brooklyn and Staten Island in New York City, and Staten Island's across the Verrazano Bridge from Brooklyn. There is a neighborhood in Staten Island. It's a very urban neighborhood. It's an older neighborhood. Procter & Gamble used to have a factory there, and it's loaded with apartment buildings. High-rise apartments. There's a lot of high-rise apartments. There's some private houses, but there's some high-rise apartments down there. And the area is called, and I just, when I heard this, it really struck a chord. The neighborhood in Staten Island is called Mariner's Harbor. Ooh. So I kind of heard that. I'm like, and this song just like immediately got my attention when I heard that.
I love that. I love songs that are like located in a place. I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's your side A. Side B is a lot different. Side B is Earl Sweatshirt. Now, for those who don't know Earl Sweatshirt, he's put out some hip-hop albums. I think it's been like a 4 or 5 year gap in between albums for him.
Right.
He is part of what's called Odd Future. Now, Odd Future is a group of artists. Tyler, the Creator, is part of Odd Future. Frank Ocean is also part of Odd Future. And Earl Sweatshirt. And so Earl Sweatshirt, what I like about him, lyrically he's really good. Musically, people might find him a bit hard to get into, but he sort of is more from hip hop into more like spoken word sort of poetry kind of thing. I really, really like it. Really smart lyrics, really like got a lot of emotional depth to the lyrics, and I love it. And it's the EP is called Feet of Clay. It's only like 5 or 6 tracks. And the track I chose is called 74 for Earl on side B.
Would you say this is a Skip Martin approved band? Oh, there's artist. Right, I'm sorry, artist. Yeah.
I don't know if he likes Earl Sweatshirt or not. I mean,
I was kind of wondering that too, if it fit into his. Yeah.
The thing with Earl Sweatshirt is sort of this album particularly, his rhymes are really good. I really like them, but he's pretty dense in the sense that his delivery isn't what you necessarily associate with hip hop. So the music and production isn't really like what you associate with hip hop. So I don't know if Skip likes him or not. I would assume, but lyrically he's excellent, and I love lyrics, and it has a lot of emotional depth to lyrics. So I'm a big Earl Sweatshirt guy.
Nice.
So it's good. It's good to see him come out with something.
Yeah. No, those were two good selections when I went and checked them out. Yeah.
Yeah. Check them out. And I got a podcast, which is to finish my theme. So we had Dolly Parton cover by Whitney Houston. Dolly Parton, me putting her into the Hall of Fame, and a great podcast if you're into music is called Dolly Parton's America. It's a podcast that interviews Dolly Parton, who's just like a phenomenal interview. She's incredible. And it goes through all of her music, the impact it's had on culture and the community, from everywhere from like, you know, country music to rock to people in the like LGBTIQ community talking about how they connect with her songs, to like feminist themes in it, to like religious themes, to like her early music was written about like kids born out of wedlock and stuff, and the radio wouldn't even play her because they thought that they couldn't play that kind of music. It's just incredible. So Dolly Parton's America, check it out.
You know, I haven't listened. I'd heard of it, but I hadn't listened to it. So I definitely want to check that out as well.
And the she wrote in the same night, she wrote Jolene, and she wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You in the same night.
Wow.
That's a very productive night.
Yeah, it must have been a good night for her, yeah.
So it's interesting. It goes into her songs, the themes she has. The latest episode is all about the song Jolene. Like, it's just about the best song. And it's a great record. And if you're sort of into music loosely, especially if you're into country music, you get a lot of her back catalog talked about in it. It's just production value on it is amazing as well. So, yeah, Dolly Parton's America. Check it out.
Awesome, Dave. Good job. Good job there. Good job. So I think we're coming to the end of the show. I can't believe it. It went fast. It went fast. I had a lot of fun tonight for sure. Doing this great conversation, great music. So definitely want to thank our audience for tuning in. I guess we should mention our December show. We're gonna be on monthly for now. The December show we'll be doing Christmas and holiday music.
Yeah. So. I'm keeping the same email from Cigar Jukebox, which is cigarjukebox@gmail.com. So it'd be a good time, too. Like, we're going to feature holiday music. If you have a favorite holiday song, it's going to be very Christmas music-centered because I don't know much music outside of that. So if you have other holiday music from other holidays or a Christmas song that you like, let us know and we can talk about it on the air.
Send an email. Yeah, I'm calling it Christmas and holiday music because it's kind of both. I mean, Christmas obviously is the main one, but we're not trying to be exclusive here. So, no, so that's great. So, yeah, definitely check that out. You can email – what's that email again? CigarJukebox@gmail.com?
Yep, CigarJukebox@gmail.com.
And you can always email me at Coop, C-O-O-P, at cigar-coop.com as well. And then, Dave, you still have your Twitter handle?
Yep. At CigarJukebox, yep.
And then mine, of course, is cigar_coop. All right. That is going to wrap up this November edition of the inaugural Primetime Jukebox. And we will see – and that's in the annals of history, by the way. Now it's in the annals of history. We'll see everybody next month. And, again, in the meantime, keep in touch with us as we get ready for our next show. Have a great one, everybody.